Back together again, you and I chatting it up Thursday style, May the 21st, 2026 on Connecticut Today. We welcome Republican State Senate member Heather Summers to the show to talk about a White House tax credit initiative that could help some Connecticut students if Governor Lamont chooses to participate. What's he waiting for? Former State Senate GOP leader John McKinney wrapped up last week's nominating conventions and looked ahead to state primaries and Election Day in November. Also, I had some thoughts on the latest rate increase request from Eversource. Wanted, though, to talk about a thing that I've been keeping you updated on for the last year and change, the opportunity for Connecticut to join in with a bunch of other states, a few blue states, but mostly red states, to say, hey, the feds will give you a break on your federal taxes. This has nothing to do with Connecticut taxes. Federal taxes, if you make a matching donation to a local scholarship-granting organization. Sounds like a no-brainer. Governor Ned Lamont says it's a no-brainer, but he's getting the wagging finger from some people who don't like it. Joining us right now, and I haven't spoken to this person in a few years, Republican State Senate member Heather Summers. She represents the eastern part of the state, District 18, Griswold, Groton, North Stonington, Plainfield, Preston, Sterling, Stonington, and Voluntown. Hey, Heather, it's Paul Pacelli again. It's been a while. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
I'm good, Heather. Good to talk with you again. Heather, this is the kind of thing that makes me want to pull out the few hairs I have left here. And I know you're on the Education Committee, so you must be following this. Here's a plan, Heather, that will help mainly maybe disadvantaged students, young students, Black and Hispanic students get aid and relief from scholarship organizations. If people want to donate to this, the Fed will match the donation. It's got nothing to do with Connecticut taxes, and yet I would imagine the governor is being threatened on all sides. What do you make of this, and have you heard anything new on this?
Well, this is a program that came out of the Big Beautiful Bill, as it's referred to, which is a federal program that allows for up to a $1,700 tax credit on your federal return. Mm-hmm. And what you would have to do is you would donate to a local nonprofit who provides scholarships to low or middle income students. And then you would get this nice, tax credit on your federal return. This is a way to incentivize people who have the means to be able to donate to organizations that can help students that want to future their education. And as you said earlier, it really is a no-brainer. The issue that we have in the state of Connecticut is that governors need to opt into the program. Mm-hmm. It's not automatic. They have to opt in. And to this day, the governor has not opted in. Our Senate has written now two letters asking, pleading, please, there's no reason to not join in, to not opt in, other than political. Mm. So once again, we have a Democratic governor putting politics or party politics above the people of the state of Connecticut who really need this the most. And those would be the lower and middle income students that could benefit greatly from this. In addition, we have our governor candidate, Ryan Fazio, who has tried with others to get a bill like this on the state level. Mm-hmm. And that has been blocked by the Democrats. And many of us, you know, hear the rhetoric, oh, we're for the working family, we're for the people of the state of Connecticut, but actions speak louder than words, and the actions are just the opposite of what you're hearing out of the Democrats. So I would encourage anyone listening, send the governor a note requesting him to opt in. Other governors from blue states have opted in because they recognize that this is important, not for the people in power, but for the people that are living in the state of Connecticut, those who need it the most. As you said, this is a no-brainer. It should have been done. And the fact that we have to plead with somebody to get it done says it all itself.
Yeah, and Heather, it just frustrates the living heck out of me when I see, with all due respect, I have nothing but the most admiration for teachers. I have friends and family members that teach. But Heather, let me just bottom line it here. When I read and hear some of this verbal twister and these verbal word salads by the teachers' unions and officials and some people in the General Assembly, the folks that you serve with in Hartford. The logic they're using here, saying, well, you know, yeah, we know it's not state money involved, but if there's too much federal money, it could involve this. I mean, come on.
It's every excuse in the book to just not take advantage of a federal program, because we can't possibly give the administration that hears the negativity every single day from this party any kudos whatsoever. This is a good idea. This is something that will help those who need it the most. And yet the state of Connecticut is not doing this purely for political reasons. And, you know, I agree. I have a sister who's a teacher. Mm-hmm. I have many friends that are teachers. And I just want to say that, you know, I have the utmost respect. They have a very difficult job, and we don't make it any easier in the General Assembly by mandates and things that we require. And we're not the ones doing the job. I have said insistently and repeatedly, we need to listen to the professionals that are doing the job, the teachers, not the teachers' union. The teachers' union is different than teachers, in my humble opinion. And, you know, many of the teachers are frustrated by the teachers' union.
Mm-hmm.
They may have some, you know, good attributes for certain areas, but quite frankly, our teachers just want to teach. They want to teach the students. You know, we put so many mandates and constraints on teachers in the state of Connecticut. It's not surprising that our test scores are where they are, because they lose the ability to teach how they feel, how they've been trained. They are professionals. And again, it's supporting the teachers is one thing. Supporting the teachers' union is something else.
And Heather, finally, if I can ask, just before we round up here, we wind up the Eversource deal. You probably saw that they want 11%, saying, "Hey, we haven't asked for anything or been approved for anything in 7 or 8 years." What are your thoughts on that?
I think the timing is very suspicious, right? We're going to not ask for a rate increase, but we're letting you know as of July of 2027, after we have a new governor, right? We're in the middle of election. We don't want to raise them during election, because that would, you know, say that our governor's not doing anything. But we're going to raise them in July of 2027 when we have a new governor. We're letting you know it's going to be an 11% increase. I want to make sure people that are listening know that just 2 weeks ago, every Democrat, every Senate Democrat voted against legislation through an amendment to remove the public benefits charge from the bill. That would have saved hundreds of dollars for every person who has Eversource in the state of Connecticut. So every Senate Democrat voted no on that. So they voted to not help you reduce your electric bill. You know, Eversource posted almost $1.7 billion with a B in profit last year.
Mm-hmm.
The CEO made over $13 million. And our governor says, "Oh, what can I do? What I'm doing, what I can. They haven't done anything. If he wanted the ability to remove the public benefits charge from your bill, he could have done it. If he picked up the phone and talked to Governor Hochul in New York and said, "Let us have this pipeline through New York for natural gas," he could have done it.
Mm-hmm.
He has not lifted a finger to help reduce electric rates. He's talked about it, but nothing's been accomplished. And this is just sort of the icing on the cake. We're not going to raise anything during his election, right? But the second we have a new person in July, guess what? We're going to look at 11% increase. That will put us at the top, probably, electric payers in the country.
Yeah.
11%.
Over Hawaii. Yep. Heather, thanks.
And on the other hand, too, we had, you know, takeovers of our water companies.
Yeah.
He hasn't stepped up either. You know, if you're an Aquarian like you are down there, wait till you see what your water bills are going to be. That's something we sounded the alarm on, got no help, but we're going to continue. You know, Ryan Fauci was a great alternative to what we have now, so I hope that people will check him out.
Heather Summers, 18th District, Connecticut State Senate member on the Republican side. Heather, thanks for the time today. We appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Heather Summers there. All right, that's it. Plain and simple. This tuition tax thing is a no-brainer. John McKinney joins us. You can catch John and the entire panel on News 8's Capitol Report every Sunday morning at 10:30. John is here. We had Liz Karandowitz on last week. Our buddy Tom Dudchick stops by from time to time. John is with us. John, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. I'm a little worried about your blood pressure after listening to the
John,
show for the last couple of hours.
It's just, John, I mean, come on. You've been there. You know, right? It's just, I mean, there's some things, John, that, you know, it just defies logic. That's it. See, John, this is why I could never serve. Because they'd wheel me out on a gurney, because they would have to strap me down and wheel me out. Some of the stuff now in modern day politics is just nuts. It's nuts.
It is crazy. It is. I used to tell people that my best jokes when I spoke to constituents, I would just tell them the truth about what happened there. They say, no, that can't be the case. What, we can get free money from the federal government and we're saying no? I said, yeah, that's really what's happening.
Yeah. John, let's go over the campaign so far and the conventions last week. First time in a bunch of years, John, as far as I can remember, no circular firing squad for the GOP. It's Ryan Fazio, a full steam ahead, huh?
Yeah, it is. The party came out remarkably united. Betsy McCoy, who I didn't think would get 15%, didn't, but she graciously, you know, endorsed Ryan Fazio. Obviously, we know about the really sort of historic fall of Aaron Stewart. Mm-hmm. And I think there's, you know, nobody's really looking back. I think it's all going forward. The Aaron Stewart piece is, you know, has nothing to do with the Republican Party.
Yep.
Ryan Fazio is a really smart, young, fresh face, and I think that's really good for the party.
Yeah, and again, John, I'm thinking if you have a foot into where the Lamont campaign stands right now, I mean, they're going to talk a real good game, but I've got to think from just the observation, if they look at Ryan Fazio, I would advise people in that party, and if they're worth their salt, John, they're probably saying this, don't take this guy for granted. I would think that's what they're saying. Maybe that's what the governor is saying, too. What do you think?
Oh, I can promise you that the governor and his team are taking Ryan Fazio very seriously. But obviously, before that, they have to take Josh Elliott very seriously.
Well, yeah, let's go with that. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I think everybody anticipated Josh Elliott would get between 15 to 20%. He got 25. The number really doesn't matter. I don't think there's a difference between 20 and 25. It probably has given him the momentum to raise the money he needs to raise. And I would anticipate now that he probably gets his state primary grant, which is close to $3 million.
Wow.
Probably get that sometime in the first, maybe second week of June. And that gives him about a month and a half to buy ads and tell people why he thinks Ned Lamont is a bad guy. I haven't heard Josh Elliott really set out a vision for his Connecticut other than we should tax millionaires. Mm. He's really just been more attacking and sort of angry at Governor Lamont. That's not a winning strategy. I think Governor Lamont will come out with a very more positive, here's what I've done, here's where we're going to go vision. People don't like voting for angry people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be really where Josh Elliott's going to fall down.
You know, John, I am not surprised that Josh Elliott has already come out. And I guess his first salvo, as you said, $1 million or more, there's a 4% surcharge on that. Because, and I've been saying this to people for months now, John, as far as the social issues, Ned Lamont is, he's a card-carrying progressive, and he said he is, and whether it's ICE or immigration or abortion or guns, I mean, it's not like he's some ravaging right-winger, and I think the Elliott people realize that they're going to have to go after Lamont primarily on the tax issues, right?
Well, and I do, and I think, look, if I were advising the Democrats, I would say if you want Ryan Fazio to be governor, you should elect Josh Elliott to be your candidate. You know, one of the things that really, you know, the difference between Josh Elliott, let's tax millionaires, and where Governor Lamont has been, let's be honest, Governor Lamont has cut taxes for the middle class and people at the lower end. He's put more money into child care and early childhood development, mm-hmm. which will help people who are having trouble affording that. And I think Governor Lamont's policy, quite frankly, I believe it, is we should take care of people in the middle class and the lower end by lessening their tax burdens, but we should be more competitive than New York and other states to attract people in. One of the things that I've said forever is that, you know, our competition is not New York and Massachusetts. Our competition is Tennessee, Florida, Texas, places with no income taxes. Opportunities exist for us to move people from New York and Massachusetts, my hometown of Westport. Lots of people came from New York City and Westchester County during COVID, but they also came here because Connecticut, although has affordability issues, is actually more affordable than New York and Massachusetts. If Josh Elliott wins, we're going to look just like New York, and people are going to say, well, all right, we want to get out of New York, but Connecticut's no longer an option, so now we're going to look elsewhere. So I think that would really be the death knell for Connecticut. We get a lot of people coming in from New York. We can get people coming in from Rhode Island and Massachusetts. We're going to lose all of that opportunity if we act just like them.
John McKinney is the guest from the Capital Report, News 8, Sundays at 10:30. You know, John, I had a couple people email me or text me saying, Could the key aspect here of a possible huge upset, it would be obviously if Josh Elliott were to win. What about the alternate party endorsements? A couple of people had mentioned in particular, John, you know, the Working Families Party. What if they, you know, tell their people, hey, register as Democrats and go vote? Do you think the governor's people are worried about that? Have they taken that into consideration?
Oh, I'm sure they're taking everything into consideration. And I think, you know, the other possibility, which, you know, we've seen before, is if Governor Lamont were to lose the primary, and I don't think he will, and I don't think he should, is it possible that he runs on a third party line? Remember, Ned Lamont burst onto the scene in Connecticut when he challenged Joe Lieberman. He won the Democratic primary, basically because of his opposition to the war in Iraq.
Yeah.
And then Joe Lieberman ran as an independent, came back and won a three-way race. I think if that scenario were going to happen, and you had a three-way race with Fazio and Lamont and Elliott, I think Josh Elliott comes in third, then the question is, who wins the race?
Interesting. John, just as we wrap up here, any kind of sidebar stories or buzz that you may have heard coming out of the conventions last week? Doesn't seem that there's a lot of intrigue just yet, maybe on maybe the first district. How do you think that one plays out with Luke Bronin and Jillian Gilchrist and John Larson? And who knows if Ruth Fortune can get on the ballot there. But, boy, with what Mr. Larson did with his delegates and whatever, that may backfire on him.
It could backfire because he's now going to be third place on the ballot, because after the the nominated person, who's Luke Bronin, who's at the top of the ballot, everything falls alphabetically. So it would go Bronin, Gilchrist, Larson. It's never great to be at the bottom of the list when people go in to vote, because if you have a Lamont-Elliott primary, Lamont's going to be on the first row. Elliott's going to be on the second row. Nobody's going to be looking anything at the third row. Something very interesting, though, happened in the last 24 hours, Paul. And one of the things that
We got about a minute left. Go ahead.
Okay. One of the things that Democrats do very well with their congressional campaigns is their opposition research and how they hammer Republicans is very good, and they've been very successful. A report just came out talking about Luke Bronin and his billionaire
funders. Yes, I saw that.
And that is the work of the congressional Democrats trying to save one of their own in John Larson. And I think we're going to see more stories about, you know, Luke Bronin isn't this hometown, you know, middle class guy from Hartford. And so we're going to see Luke Bronin get attacked a little bit here.
Yeah, I saw that. That's the thought I had. I said, well, and it begins. And listen, the former mayor of Hartford, he's no newbie. He gets this, and he's got those Yale connections. So we will see. Hey, John McKinney, you can see him and all the other folks on a great panel coming up this Sunday morning and every Sunday morning. WTNH News 8, 10:30 to 11, the Capital Report. Hey, John, thanks as usual. Have a great weekend. We appreciate it.
Yeah, happy Memorial Day. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Well, as the great Count Basie used to say, how about one more once or one more time? Yes, here we go with electric costs proposed to go up for a lot of folks in the state, not everybody. Hey, how are you? It is a Thursday. We hate to be the bearer of bad news here on the wonderful fuzzy, you know what you love it, nice warm program here of Connecticut Today. But Eversource is going to request, now they'll probably settle for something less. I don't know. I'm not in the minds of these people. But Eversource, that serves, I think, about 2.something million people in Connecticut, I believe, of our population of 3.5 million or something like that. The rest are UI, and then there's UI and Avangrid, and then you have the municipalities, the 8 or 10 municipalities, who essentially are their own power companies, set their own rates, maintain the power grid and all that. But Eversource says here, we'll use this story in the Connecticut News Junkie, Doug Harding's story. Eversource to request an 11% increase starting next year. They say they need this because of inflation, continued investment in the power grid, and other stuff. This would be their first rate review since 2017. So, you know, they're coming in here, they are saying, you know, hey, wait a minute, we've gone about 9 or 10 years here, cut us a break. It would be their first rate review in 8 years, in fact. An 11% average increase from Connecticut ratepayers that would raise about $503 million more in revenue starting 1 July, July 1st of next year, not this year. They wrote a letter to PURA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority. The $503 million, they say, deficiency, that's a fancy word, huh? Deficiency is not a surprise considering the impact of inflation since the last rate review in 2018. Specifically, Eversource says more revenue is needed to continue ongoing maintenance, vegetation management, that means cutting stuff down that or cutting it back so it doesn't fall on power lines during summer and winter storms, and critical system investment. Yeah, they've got to invest in their technology, invest in the company to keep, you know, to keep the power flowing here. The letter says the company's filing, expected in mid-July of this year, will show that inflation in the general economy trended at about 30% from 2016 through 2025. And they say that by comparison, the letter states Eversource's operating and maintenance expenses increased by about 16% over the same time. They say they saved customers $45 million a year. The utility also says it has not yet recovered about $600 million of the $3.3 billion invested in the electric infrastructure since 2017. The remaining half of that rate revenue deficiency, they say, according to that letter, is to cover higher costs and operating needs. All right, I could get into the numbers here over and over and over again. Here's the bottom line. They want more money. And again, I'm not going to sit here and pound them. I'm not. And I know a lot of you are, and your Eversource customers and your UI Avangrid customers, whatever. I get that. I understand that. And you your hands, you shouldn't be getting sweaty palms and shaking hands, you know, quivering hands, opening up your electric bill or going online. I guess you have paperless there with Eversource, and you can just check that out, too. So you don't need the nausea of that every month. And again, I'm sure Eversource will, you know, they're asking for 11%. That's probably a target. They'll say, okay, maybe we'll settle for 8 or 9. I don't know. Here's the bottom line. It's a simple question here. Let's cut away all the vegetation of everything else, as we say. They're talking about vegetation management and all that. Let's ask a simple question here. When does it stop? Or is it going to stop? Or do you expect... do you have an unrealistic expectation that Eversource or UI or Avangrid or any other power company around God's green earth, do you have any expectation that it is fair for Eversource to ask them to not recover costs that they have? They're not a charity. UI is not a charity. Avangrid is not a charity. And I don't want to sound like a jerk saying that, but there are realities to this. And they say, hey, this is our first request in about 8 years. And, you know, they're a publicly held company, I believe. You know, they've got to pay their investors. You know, you got to pay a dividend here. So here's my question to you, because this is one of my pet topics that I always look at to really gauge in a certain way if at least half of our lawmakers are taking this whole thing seriously. So Eversource says they're filing for a rate increase. They want 11%. They say, hey, don't yell at us. We have expenses. Inflation has gone up. You know, we're the ones that you bitch and moan at if the power goes out in a fall storm, in a hurricane, or in a winter storm, or a big nor'easter or whatever. So, you know, listen, we have our expenses. We know you don't have a choice here unless you want to live off the grid, if that's possible. But again, folks, this is one of those topics, one of those issues where you have to ask, what are we doing long term here? Eversource is proposing an 11% rate increase for next year, or to kick it in next year. So I ask you, and listen, no idea is a bad idea. No question is a bad question. What do you think? What can or should be done to put a cap or at least control spiraling energy costs? You tell me. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. So again, even when it appears, if I'm reading this right, even if they get some increase, it appears that Eversource is raising rates again. Okay, they say, hey, it's been 8 or 9 years. Look at all these costs that have gone up. So we're asking for 11% more. I don't know if that's 11% in a year or phased in whatever. Okay, you know what this illustrates to me? Not how evil Eversource is, or how evil Avangrid is, or how evil UI is, whatever. You know what this illustrates to me? That policymakers in this state, including those who, you know, genuflect at all these green initiatives, they, over the past 10, 20, 30, 40 years, when we saw this train coming down the track, and we talk about it all the time, coming down off the track, and we have too many lawmakers in Hartford who want to bloviate and green this and energy this, and they don't get off their asses and do something about it. I'm sorry if you think I'm coming on a little strong here, but am I wrong? Every freaking session of the General Assembly, oh, you know, we have to do something about energy policy in this state, and we have to, I have an idea, do something, damn it. You get paid out of my tax dollars, freaking do something. The governor goes out, and to his credit, he says, well, you know, we're going to eventually need more natural gas, and he gets booed. You freaking people, what do you want? And you're the same people who will bitch and moan about your Eversource bill, and then you say, well, no, I don't want natural gas. And some of the Republican candidates were right a few weeks ago when they said, hey, you got to sue the state of New York for blocking one of these pipelines that could lessen your expenses. And what does the governor say? Well, I'm going to talk to Kathy Hochul. Yeah, governor, sir, with all due respect, that's worked, hasn't it? My God. Lather, rinse, and repeat in the state of Connecticut. And I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not. But for God Almighty's sake, do something. We have the second highest utility bills in the country. That is unacceptable. And I ask you, in particular, what does the Democratic majority in Hartford do about this? Well, you know, we can't We can't, all the public benefits charge, because it's got so many green initiatives. Screw it. People should be able to pay for their electric bill, and that's it. You want to pay for all this green energy crap and charging stations or whatever, put it in a separate budget line in the budget and debate it. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. And, of course, what are we hearing? All the usual subjects in Hartford, the usual suspects are already, you know, the Democratic side. Well, you know, we're going to vigorously oppose this. That's all you do is oppose stuff. You never get out in front of it. Like I say, we don't do that in this state. We have five or six major issues that we never get out in front of. And the cost of electricity, and I'm not saying it's easy. Again, I'm no whiz at this. But you're not going to convince me. And look, I may be out of line saying this, but I don't care. You're not going to convince me one single solitary bit that there are a number of lawmakers in Hartford, including those on the in the majority side right now, at the powers that be, you're not going to convince me that they don't say, well, listen, we can't do this with a fan. It's going to cost us votes. So let's just, you know, let's just say the right thing about the environment and electricity, because in the end, people can't start their own power company, and the hell with them. Let them eat cake. I am damn straight serious when I say this. You're not going to convince me otherwise that there are not people in the leadership in Hartford that when you say, hey, we got to come out with something about electric rates, who sit there and kind of roll their eyes saying, yeah, what are we supposed to do? What you tell me what we're supposed to do? It is maddening. And again, see, I'm not taking the cheap and easy way out. And a lot of people in Hartford and both parties are going to say, well, you know, the burden of costs borne by people. And they're going to blame Avangrid. They're going to blame UI. They're going to blame Eversource. Bah, 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 bah. And you know what's going to change? Nothing. Unless you change the way you vote this November. Because we've had the same leadership in power in Hartford for decades, since back in the mid-1980s. Tell me what's changed. But you'll probably figure I'm going to vote this way because of Trump. You're driving me nuts already on this. So listen, you can be ticked off all you want at Eversource. They got their bills to pay, too. They got their investors to pay, too. You know who you should be upset at? Our spineless leadership in Hartford. That year after year after year, as Connecticut climbs that list, you know, up the ladder, and now we're number two behind Hawaii. Can you imagine if a survey came out and somebody said, and it made the news cycle, and I was talking about it here, and Lisa was, and Melissa was, and all the other talk hosts around the state? Hey, Connecticut, we have now the, and we're only like a couple of dollars a month or a couple of percentage points in back of Hawaii. We have the second highest monthly utility bills, electric bills on average in the freaking country. You know what? If we're going to be that bad, you know what I say? Let's top Hawaii. I'm hoping we get the highest electric bills in the country. And you know what a lot of people in Hartford will do when we get that? Yeah, nothing.